Let this press conference put it on the public record that Homeland Security knows where I am. I am not a criminal. I am not a terrorist. I am a mother.
That's the statement of Elvira Arellano, an immigrant who took refuge in a Chicago church where she sought sanctuary from deportation. Her speech was read by the Oscar-winning actor Ariana DeBose. Anthony, I'm wondering if you can lay out for us how you chose all of these speeches and the sections that you and Haley divided them into.
We had the benefit of the original work that I was able to do with Howard Zinn, covering some of the early years of the period covered in this new book. Some of this material we first encountered on your program, Amy, and in other independent media outlets who were sharing these important voices that should be far more widely known than they are. And we then, Haley and I, started working around 2 years ago, sifting through that material and trying to identify those voices that really spoke most powerfully to the dynamic issues of the century. And increasingly also, we were discovering that the voices that are gathered in this book are often not speaking to a single issue, but finding connections between various forms of injustice, making those very important connections that are embodied in the term you brought up earlier, intersectionality. And of course, the book includes a speech by Kimberly Crenshaw, whose work is under attack not only for intersectionality, but critical race theory, and also a statement by the African American Policy Forum that she directs. So we really had the benefit of Howard's input, the work of actors and students who read these pieces over the years on various stages and in various classes. And then I really am grateful for Haley's own experience as an organizer and her ability to speak to speeches that she had heard or been inspired by in her own right.
Now, Haley Pessin, we're speaking in the midst of the Writers Guild of America strike. Thousands of people are in picket lines across the country. Introduce us to what Rosario Dawson, the great actor, read at your big opening splash of this book in Town Hall.
Yes, Rosario Dawson read a statement by Alianza Nacional de Campesinas. This was 700,000 farm workers, female farm workers, who stood with Hollywood actors against sexual assault at the height of Me Too in November of 2017.
Dear sisters, we write on behalf of the approximately 700,000 women who work in the agricultural fields and packing sheds across the United States. For the past several weeks, we have watched and listened with sadness as we have learned of the actors, models, and other individuals who have come forward to speak out about the gender-based violence they've experienced at the hands of bosses, co-workers, and other powerful people in the entertainment industry. We wish that we could say that we're shocked to learn that this is such a pervasive problem in your industry. Sadly, we're not surprised, because it's a reality we know far too well. Countless farm worker women across our country suffer in silence because of the widespread sexual harassment and assault that they face at work. We do not work under bright stage lights or on the big screen. We work in the shadows of society, in isolated fields and packing houses that are out of sight and out of mind for most people in this country. Your job feeds souls, fills hearts, and spreads joy. Our job nourishes the nation with the fruits, vegetables, and other crops that we plant, pick, and pack. Even though we work in very different environments, we share a common experience of being preyed upon by individuals who have the power to hire, fire, blacklist, and otherwise threaten our economic, physical, and emotional security. Like you, there are few positions available to us, and reporting any kind of harm or injustice committed against us doesn't seem like a viable option. Complaining about anything, even sexual harassment, seems unthinkable, because too much is at risk, including the ability to feed our families and preserve our reputations. We understand the hurt, confusion, isolation, and betrayal that you might feel. We also carry shame and fear resulting from this violence. It sits on our backs like oppressive weights. But deep in our hearts, we know that it is not our fault. The only people at fault are the individuals who choose to abuse their power to harass, threaten, and harm us like they have harmed you. In these moments of despair, and as you cope with scrutiny and criticism because you have bravely chosen to speak out against the harrowing acts that were committed against you, please know that you're not alone. We believe and stand with you in solidarity. Alianza Nacional de Campesinas.
That's the great actor Rosario Dawson reading Alianza Nacional de Campesinas. 700,000 female farm workers say they stand with Hollywood actors against sexual assault. And this was, again, in the first year of the Trump administration, November of 2017. Anthony, if you can introduce us to what actress Laura Gomez reads and why you included this in the collection.
Yes, this is a speech by Gustavo Madrigal Pina, who was a student in Georgia, undocumented student, who was speaking out against the efforts in Georgia, which, of course, were part of broader national efforts to remove undocumented students from opportunities to access education and other public resources. And he speaks out very forcefully as someone who calls himself undocumented and unafraid.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gustavo. I am undocumented, and I am unafraid. Mm. I was brought here to this country at the age of 9 by my parents. Ever since, many people have asked me what brought my family to this country. The answer has always been simple and always been the same: poverty. My parents had to make a life or death choice between living in poverty or to go out and search for a better life. I said life or death choice because our journey to the United States brought us a couple of times close to death. I remember the second time of walking through the desert. My mom collapsed from the heat. Now, we were very lucky to have such generous people traveling with us who gave us their water so that my mom could drink it, get up, and keep walking. I am eternally grateful to them. At the end of the journey, we were kidnapped. Kidnapped by a gang. Me and my sister, we were 9 and 8 years old at that time. It didn't care. They stripped all of us of our clothes, our money, and our dignity. Luckily, we were let go and we eventually made it to Griffin, Georgia, which would become my family's home. I don't blame my parents for the situation that I'm in. I am grateful to them. I realize that they made the responsible and courageous choices that they had to make, that any parent in that situation, in those shoes, would have made for their kids. Why am I sharing this with you today? It's not to gain your sympathy, but to obtain your support, to show you that I am not an illegal alien, that I am indeed a human being with rights. In these troubled economic times, the state of Georgia has decided to make me and my fellow undocumented brothers and sisters an enemy and a scapegoat. First, they banned us from the top five universities here in the state of Georgia, no matter how qualified we are to attend those institutions. And then they criminalize our very own existence and livelihood through HB 87. Well, I'm here to tell the state of Georgia that I'm not going down without a fight, that I am here to fight for my brothers and sisters. I'm here to tell the state of Georgia that I refuse to become a second-class citizen. I refuse to let anyone, become a second-class citizen. I will put up resistance as long as there is blood pumping through my veins. And I am also here to ask you to join me and my undocumented brothers and sisters in the fight of our lives. We need to fight back. We need to organize through the struggles that we all share as part of the working class. And together we can beat HB 87, overturn the ban, and win social justice and educational equality for all. My name is Gustavo Madrigal. I am undocumented, unafraid, and unashamed.
That was the actor Laura Gomez reading Gustavo Madrigal Pena's Undocumented and Unafraid at Lincoln Center. When we come back, we'll talk more about voices of a people's history of the United States in the 21st century, documents of hope and resistance. Stay with us.
I will stand for you. Could you stand for me? Everybody deserves to be free. I would lend a hand to you. Could you lend a hand to me? Everybody deserves to be free. It's close to nine, but at least the fire, story's over. No, I won't let you walk on alone. I will stand for you. Would you stand for me? Everybody.
Everybody deserves to be free. Deva Mahal and the Resistance Revival Chorus. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We continue our conversation with Anthony Arnov and Haley Pessin, co-editors of the book Voices of a People's History of the United States in the 21st Century, Documents of Hope and Resistance. The collection is inspired by the historian Howard Zinn's landmark book, A People's History of the United States. Anthony, if you can talk about the venues you've used, and here you have Howard Zinn writing A People's History of the United States that sold millions of copies, and he's quoting different people, you know, movers and shakers, especially within movements. But he found that to be able to actually print the whole speeches meant so much, which is why, is that right, the two of you put together these books. And now the third edition has come out from Voices of a People's History of the United States, publishing that several times, expanded, and now Voices of a People's History of the United States in the 21st Century.
Yeah, Amy, what Howard described to me when we first talked about this project was that A People's History of the United States clearly, as you mentioned earlier, took on a real life that no one could have expected for a book that in its first printing was a run of 5,000 copies. And it has now sold more than 4 million copies. And that's just the official sales figures. We know that people are sharing used copies, taking out copies from libraries. Teachers are photocopying chapters to bring them into the classroom. People are passing along dog-eared copies to friends and family members. So the impact is far greater than that 4 million figure can possibly capture. But when Howard and I were working together, he said that he realized that one of the things that was most powerful about A People's History of the United States was the way that readers encountered their voices, like Fannie Lou Hamer and Eugene Debs and Frederick Douglass and others that they had not encountered in their traditional textbooks and education, or had encountered in ways that completely marginalized the real drive and passion and force of their ideas. And so he had this idea of gathering together an archive, an anthology of some of those voices that he had drawn on and that had inspired him in writing A People's History of the United States. And then this interesting milestone occurred where this was in the early 2000s. HarperCollins, the publisher of A People's History of the United States, saw that they were about to sell the 1 millionth copy. And they came to Howard and they said, well, we'd like to do something to mark this occasion. And their idea was to have an academic conference, to have historians gather and talk about the book. And Howard said, I would not be caught dead at such a conference, but I have another idea. Anthony and I are working on this other project, gathering these documents together. We would like to perform them on stage. And 20 years ago, in fact, in February at the 92nd Street Y in New York City, we had that very first performance. You were there. And on stage, we had Kurt Vonnegut, the great novelist from Indiana, reading Eugene Debs, who, of course, was also himself from Indiana. Other artists that night included Marissa Tomei, who was just part of our performance 20 years later at the Town Hall, James Earl Jones, the great actor, Patti Smith, the musician. And that night, something really magical happened. I mean, Howard and I went into that night with a little bit of trepidation. This is not a fancy performance. There's no blocking or staging or set design. It was just a microphone, some music stands, and some chairs on a stage. But it was so powerful to be in a room hearing how these voices from the past spoke to the present and hearing them in a collective setting that really made it feel so immediate and so alive and reminded us that we're constantly a part of history and the making of history, and that when we speak up and when we get together and organize collectively, we can change history.
Haley Pessin, introduce us to Susan Breaux and what we're about to watch and hear.
Yes. So at the Town Hall book launch, Marissa Tomei read the words of Susan Breaux, the mother of Heather Heyer, who was killed by a white supremacist at Charlottesville, whose car he ran into a crowd of people. And this was read by Susan Breaux at Heather's funeral, which she'd opened up to a larger group of people to collectively mourn the loss and to encourage them to fight against these far right.
So this is Marissa Tomei, the great actor, reading the words of Susan Breaux, who had just lost her daughter.
My child's favorite Facebook post was, "If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention." She paid attention. She made a lot of us pay attention. Oh my gosh. Dinner with her, we knew it was going to be an ordeal of listening and conversation. And perhaps disagreement. But it was going to happen. And we would talk about all the stuff. We talked about politics. We talked about anything that caught her eye, that she felt was fair, unfair. She'd talk about her feelings about the police and how things were going. I mean, she just talked. Girl loved to talk. And she was single, so there was nobody listening at home, so Mama got a lot of it. And that was wonderful. You never think you're going to bury your child. You never think to take those pictures. They asked me for pictures for this, and I struggled. I, I, I,
had pictures from her childhood, but I had to go to Facebook to find pictures of my child because we were always together. So you take pictures of the ones you love because you don't know when they're not going to be here. But here's what I want to say to you today. This could all be for nothing. I could have said, let's not do this publicly. Let's have a small private funeral. But, you know, that's not who Heather was. And anybody who knew Heather said, this is the way she had to go. Big and large. Had to have the world involved. Because that's my child. She's that way. Always has been, and she will continue to be. Because although Heather was a caring and she was a compassionate person, so are a lot of you. A lot of you. You. You go that extra mile. And I think that's the reason that what happened to Heather has really struck a chord. Because we know what she wanted to do. It's achievable. But we don't all have to die. We don't have to sacrifice our lives. They tried to kill my child to shut her up. Well, guess what? You just magnified her. So here's what I want to happen. You ask me, what can I do? So many caring people, so many pages and pages and pages of stuff I'm going through. So I'm reading pages and pages of how she's touching the world. I want this to spread. This is just the beginning of Heather's legacy. This is not the end of Heather's legacy. You need to find in your heart that small spark of accountability. What is there that I can do to make the world a better place? What injustice do I see? And you might want to turn away. I don't know, I don't really want to get involved with that, and I don't want to speak up. They'll be annoyed with me. My boss might think less of me. I don't care. You poke that finger at yourself, like Heather would have done, and you make it happen. You take that extra step. You find a way to make a difference in the world. My child had a high school education. My child was no saint. She was hard to raise because everything was a negotiation. But you know what? She was a firm believer in whatever she believed. Let's do that. Let's find that spark of conviction. Let's find it in ourselves, that action. Let's spread this. Let's have that uncomfortable dialogue. It ain't easy sitting down saying, well, why are you upset? It ain't easy. It ain't easy sitting down and going, yeah, well, I think this way, and I don't agree with you, but I'm going to respectfully listen to what you have to say. We're not going to sit around and shake hands and go, kumbaya. I'm sorry. It's not all about forgiveness. I know that's not a popular trend. But the truth is, we're going to have our differences. We're going to be angry with each other. But let's channel that anger into righteous action. So, remember in your heart, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. And I want you to pay attention. Find what's wrong. Don't ignore it. Don't look the other way. You make a point to look at it. And you say to yourself, what can I do to make a difference? And that's how you're going to make my child's death worthwhile. I'd rather have my child. But by golly, if I gotta give her up, we're gonna make it count.
Marissa Tomei reading the words of Heather Heyer's mother, Susan Breaux, at her funeral. Heather Heyer killed by a white supremacist who drove into a crowd of anti-racist protesters after the Unite the Right march at the University of Virginia. Finally, the latest Florida news, publisher Penguin Random House and Pen America are suing the Escambia County School District for banning books on race and LGBTQ issues, citing a violation of the First Amendment. The fight back against the banning of books, where you have a Texas county library saying if they're being forced to put certain books on the shelves, they'll close the library, or Missouri, the legislature voting to defund the libraries. I want to get each of your final comments on this issue of the closing down of the pushback on discourse, but how people are rising up. Let's start with you, Anthony.
Well, I think we have to start, Amy, from the question of why is the teaching of history so threatening to people in positions of power? They understand the force of people who are learning history, who are learning to think critically, who are questioning authority, who are learning to think for themselves. They're very threatened by students like Haley encountering a book such as A People's History of the United States in their high school classroom, people encountering the work of critical race theory, Kimberly Crenshaw, concepts like intersectionality, anti-racist education. That threatens them. And so there's a very serious backlash taking place. But I am encouraged, as you say, by the examples of resistance. One of my favorites is the Brooklyn Public Library opening up their digital collection to high school students around the country and saying, if there's an effort to ban books where you are, check the book out from our library.
And Haley Pessin, we give you the last word.
Yes. So one of the pieces featured in the book is by Jesse Hagopian, and I'm Not Afraid to Teach Truth. And I think that's important because teachers are going to be one of the front lines. Students are going to be one of the front lines in resisting these kinds of attacks. And I think what our hope is for the book is that this will actually be a resource for folks, whether it's in committing to teach some of the pieces in the book for Days of Action, whether it's in making performances more widely accessible to people. One of the wonderful things that the Voices Performance Project does is work with young people and have students also put on these performances. And it's something you can do anywhere. And so our hope is that it will be a tool for people to learn not just prior history, but really recent history and how people have fought back, how people have resisted their own conditions of oppression, and most importantly, how people have acted in solidarity because they've recognized the links between these different struggles. And that is a key theme of the book, that none of these struggles are really separate, that it actually matters that we are fighting together. And that's the way that we'll win.
Haley Pessin and Anthony Arnov, co-editors of the book Voices of a People's History of the United States in the 21st Century, Documents of Hope and Resistance. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Join me, Robin, every Friday at noon for Roots and Berries. Tune in to hear bluegrass, old-time music, and other rootsy little nuggets with a focus on Canadian players, singers, and pickers. That's Roots and Berries, Fridays over the noon hour, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Listen to Home of Burnaby Rock, CJSF's Lux Rock Electronic Show. 2 hours of relative power each and every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., and repeats every Thursday, 10 to midnight, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Do it.
Hey, folks. Joe.